Two things came back for the Phoenix Suns on Friday night at Footprint Center. Cam Johnson and winning. We'll talk about both on today's episode of Locked On Suns. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons, a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thanks so much for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Friday. It is literally Friday as I'm recording, coming back from a very late game. You can find us on all podcast platforms and YouTube. The best way to support the show is to listen. The best way to listen is subscribe. Get this show in your feed every single Monday through Friday to get caught up with your favorite team. Hopefully, we are at the inflection point, turning point of this season, and there's a lot more positive to go around. You can also follow this show on Twitter, where we are back with our seven word or less game takes. Now that things are getting a little more back to normal, we have Josh Gordon at The Real Nicotine saying DA and Mikhail are different with Cam. We have at K1 to hop season, when healthy, we good. I agree with that one. Jacob Padilla, friend of the show, at Jacob Padilla _ Cam's back, all is well. So head over there, follow on Twitter at LockedOnPHXSuns to get in on that. Cam Johnson returned to this Suns team, and they were able to pull out the victory 117 to 112. We're going to start with the moment of the game, which was Cam Johnson checking into the game at two separate moments here tonight. We'll dive into his performance and what it meant in a second. First, today's show, guys, brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. I have a couple of touchy-feely reasons that Cam Johnson's return mattered today and felt impactful and felt different in that building, which I, again, was at this game. And I have a couple more X's and O's, real basketball reasons. I want to remind everybody about a giveaway as we move toward Cam Johnson talk. You can see it on YouTube. If you haven't been on YouTube, now's a great time. Good excuse to check out YouTube. It's a medium purple Suns t-shirt from one of the 90s nights earlier in the season, I believe sometime in December. But the good thing about it is, well, one, it looks cool, has the old Sunburst logo. It's a cool purple. It's a nice material. It's a real shirt, and it's a medium. It's not one of those huge ones. What you need to do to get a chance at this shirt is go to Apple Podcasts, hit the 5-star review, leave a cool comment. Favorite part about listening to the show, favorite Suns memory, something funny about the team, something smart about the team, whatever you think is going to get my attention and be the winning comment, the winning description, whatever, on your 5-star rating. Go ahead and put that in there. I will pick the best one in time for Monday's show, and I will announce the winner when Brandon joins me on Monday. So, giveaway. Follow on Twitter for seven words or less. Subscribe. All of that good stuff. Now let's dive in. Cam Johnson checked in the first time at, I want to get this right, actually. I was going to say the six-minute mark, but now I'm thinking about it. Yeah, 5 minutes and 45 seconds left in the first quarter. So about halfway through the first quarter, he checks in for the first time. Arena loses its mind. I know an arena doesn't have a mind, but I'll say all 20,000 people in that building, almost in unison, gave one of the biggest cheers of the season, all right? Maybe Booker's 8-point third quarter that he had against Chicago, and then this moment, and I'm not even exaggerating. And he made an impact right away. He made a couple threes early. He made two of his first three threes, and another mid-range jump shot. So we got to 8 points in a hurry, and he finished with a pretty solid box score. 19 total points. Four of 10 from the field, but most of his shots were from deep. He made two of six, and then he got to the line quite a bit. Some of those were being fouled. The Nets came back, which we'll talk about, and the Suns were able, the Suns put Cam Johnson on the line, basically, in some of those, but a lot of them were also him drawing contact. I think he had an and one at one point, got genuinely fouled a couple times, and I think that was a career high with the 9 free throws. So he was impacting the game in a lot of ways. Let's keep on the basketball, and then I'll get to the more, ephemeral ways that Cam's return mattered tonight. From a basketball standpoint, you watch this game, I'm sure. If you didn't, then you'll watch him in one of the next games, as this team gets more watchable, by the way. You felt it, right? Another talented player. Another guy who can hold up against other NBA talent on both ends of the floor. And I don't mean to do that as like setting the bar really low and almost saying it in an insulting way to Cam, like, congratulations, you're a capable player. Whoop-de-doo, you're back. I genuinely just mean that even that is a breath of fresh air. I think he exceeded and surpassed that. I think the level that he was able to play through physicality, the way that he was able to be, I don't want to say a distributor, because it's not like he was out there running pick and rolls, but, you know, attack a closeout, dump the ball to a rolling or cutting big man, keep the ball moving if the shot isn't there, all that kind of stuff. He had a steal in transition late, where really the steals from Ayton and Britt and Cam at the end of the game were what kept Brooklyn from probably having an even better chance at winning this one. And so he was only out there for 22 minutes, which brings us to the second moment of the game. Cam checked out at the 4-minute... No, that doesn't sound right. He checked out midway through the fourth quarter. Monty basically put him in after Brooklyn made a little bit of a run. And I guess Monty told TNT pregame, because for people who might not be familiar, we all do our pregame with Monty, but when there's a, we all meaning the normal media, but when there's a national TV game, whether that's ESPN or TNT, the announcers for that game, so in this case, Reggie Miller and I believe Kevin Harlan, they get some one-on-one time with Monty alone after we leave, all right? And that's how sometimes you'll hear things come up on the broadcast that maybe hadn't been out there before or whatever. It seems like they told Monty that Cam, or sorry, Monty told them that Cam was on an 18-minute limit. That was the restriction that the medical staff had put into place, all right? So entering the fourth quarter, Cam was sitting at about 15 minutes. He's not on the floor to start the fourth quarter, but Brooklyn cut it to, I believe, 15. But it was at 20 to start the fourth quarter. So in about 3 minutes, they cut the lead by 5, and they're getting some momentum. Kyrie was being a little bit more aggressive. They were getting the ball inside. Kyrie had an and-one three-pointer, on and on. So Monty decided to put Cam in the game at that point, 9 minutes. So you're thinking, all right, he's going to have to take him out at the six-minute mark, and they're going to have to live with a closing lineup that's looked a lot like, that will look a lot like the past recent losses have looked, where they might not have enough offense, they might not have enough overall talent on the floor to weather the storm if Brooklyn keeps making their push. And so lo and behold, Cam comes in, he misses a couple of threes, he does have a block on Nick Claxton, rebound, but he checks out at the 6 minute and 13 second mark. And so you're thinking, all right, 18 minutes, that's it. But Monty comes back with Cam at the 3 minute and 42 second mark. Now, post game, Monty wouldn't admit or agree to the 18 minute thing. Cam was a little bit coy about it. We know Monty doesn't tend to care much for these types of minute restrictions. I can understand why he doesn't want to commit to them fully. He didn't tell us pregame. He wouldn't, come fess up postgame, because we don't know what the conversations are like. Obviously, it's not like you get to that minute and all of a sudden your body flips a switch and you're more susceptible to injury or problems. And so no one, it's far from hard and fast, right? It's just an estimation. And so I'm not necessarily critical, but it definitely helped that minutes limit was not foolproof because Monty was able to put Cam back in. And that's where I want to round us off here on the Cam portion is the crowd response was one thing, but the team response I think was equally important. You just felt it. Monty said that he could see Bridges kind of waving Cam out back onto the court when he first checked in at that point in time. DeAndre Ayton was saying, like, you know, that's our a brother. He said that the main thing that he felt tonight that helped them get to the win on both ends was when you look at 30 assists, when you look at the defense they were able to play up until the fourth quarter on Brooklyn. He just felt like, Ayton said he felt like they were playing for one another. And it wouldn't be a surprise to me if the return of Cam just energized them, brought their spirits up. I don't know if that lasts past this game, but they need anything they can get. Maybe next game it'll be Chris Paul returning that gives them a little bit more juice. I think that's where we're at as these players start to return to the lineup. Either way, Cam was both a helpful two-way player to come bring some stability for this group. He also is a beloved teammate and a guy that everyone's going to rally around. Both of those things helped him propel the team to a win and the team to close out a much-needed win. Want to also talk about Mikal Bridges' big game and overall why this offense looked the way it did. We'll talk about that and more coming up. First, today's show, folks, once again brought to you by LinkedIn. As a small business owner or hiring manager, you know that success in 2023 can be about finding the right people for your business. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by matching open roles with people who have the skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve your goals. You might know I work at ASU. As my day job, we have a pretty small operation that is running a full sports research and education institute. We need the right people. We've used LinkedIn to hire before. ASU has their own platform. Sometimes that's not enough. You want to find qualified people. You want to find people who are going to match your culture, and you can set up a lot of that through LinkedIn Jobs. They help you quickly attract qualified candidates to your open jobs with targeting tools. They go beyond resume data by using insights from your post, your company, and their nearly 1 billion member profiles to put your post in front of the most qualified candidates. You can identify them again on LinkedIn Jobs and connect with those candidates fast and for free. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen those candidates and rate them based on your job qualifications all on one platform. I'm sure if you've logged in to LinkedIn recently, if you're a user, whether you run a business or you're maybe applying, you've seen the recommendation. Are you open for work? Are you hiring? It's trying to prompt you. It's getting all of its users on board. We know hiring, we know job movement, all this stuff is in the news right now. People are moving, changing, different, finding different things. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA today. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Cam Johnson was one thing, but he only played 22 minutes, and the Suns had to do a lot of other stuff well to get this much-needed win. Mikal Bridges probably has to be at the top of that list. 28 points, 9 assists, just 3 turnovers. It was him and Ayton. But I want to start with Mikal because I think a lot more went through him. The Suns decided in this game to, without Landry Shamet healthy, with Dwayne Washington struggling and kind of out of the rotation right now, and Sabin Lee very green, very inexperienced, they decided, and then obviously Booker Payne and Paul still out, they decided to go with Damian Lee as the starting kind of point guard. The smallest guy in the starting lineup, let's say. But even though he can't handle the ball a little bit, what really that ended up meaning is Mikal was the primary playmaker on offense tonight. And I think he exceeded my expectations. It's not to say there haven't been games when he's been this good recently. I think he seems to be past whatever the problems were, if he was playing hurt, if he was just fatigued. I don't know how he found a way to power through that, but he didn't miss any games. He didn't really, you know, slow down in the minute department, and yet he's popped up on the other side of it, and he's looking pretty good. He has 20-plus points in four of his last five games now. He had a really strong game in the win against Golden State, playing 40-plus minutes, just like he did tonight, going for 25, 9, and 5 assists in that one. Tonight was pretty similar in terms of a big defensive assignment. In that game, it was Curry. In this game, it was Kyrie, and still being able to contribute offensively. He had a really big bucket in the fourth quarter when the Nets made a final push, where he was able to, they went into his zone defensively, and they were playing fast offensively, and Kyrie was just creating magic, basically just making tough shots like Kyrie does. And Mikhail had his hands full trying to defend that, but he found a way at for just one big shot, caught the ball on the right wing, decisive, two dribbles to the free throw line, immediate pull up, and no one's contesting that. We know it. He had his mind made up he was going to shoot, and with that level of confidence and no defender being really able to do much of anything when Mikhail gets to his spots, he made it. It really steadied things. I'm not going to tell you that won them the game, because there were some missed free throws by him, Bridges, as well as Damian Lee, and some other shenanigans at the very end. But for all intents and purposes, that shot went a long way. And overall, I mean, he made a couple of nice reads, both of Saben Lee's threes, which were wide open because the defense doesn't really guard him when the ball's not in his hands. But both of those threes were assisted by Bridges on some pretty nice reads, really in isolation, kind of like halfway post-up type of opportunities where they were able to get him the ball. And so it was a game where you really saw his growth as a player operating an offense. I mean, look, you can make you can criticize the Nets all you want, but at the end of the day, Mikhail Bridges was the primary playmaker in a victory over a team where Kyrie Irving was the primary playmaker. That should mean something. Ben Simmons got ejected. The Nets are playing like crap without KD. All that's true, but there's no arguing that basic fact. He did have a couple turnovers where he was trying to get the ball to Ayton on a seal, on a mismatch deep in the post. The plays that I think make you at home, Suns fans, pull their hair out watching Ayton not be able to get the ball with such an obvious opportunity to score. But I think those, I mean, as much as that's a very basic basketball play that, you know, a YMCA coach would drill you on, I do think we have to be a little reasonable and say, as much as that might be the case, how many times in Bridges' career, from high school to college to the NBA, has he been the one having to feed the ball to a big man in the post off of, you know, a bunch of offensive action and then threading a pass like that? I give him credit for trying it. I think those passes are a little bit more difficult than we're giving him credit for. And at the end of the day, they were his only turnovers. He had one extra one that I missed, but two of his three turnovers were those passes. And so you still get 9 assists, you still make almost half your shots and have a great game. I'm not going to dock you on it too much. You still tried. It's not like you just threw the ball away on accident because you panicked, right? So very, very strong performance, even though there are going to be some growing pains. Same can be said for DeAndre Ayton, I think. He also had a shot late in this game from mid-range, and it came after a sequence where, as much as I was saying Cam is helping, Ayton did have a lot more space, which is another element of Cam's return that really helped. Just one more shooter where it's not Torrey Craig who has to be on the floor. It's not Ish Wainwright. It's not Dario Saric, whoever you want to put, Jock Landale. It is a real bona fide shooter. Created more space for Ayton, created more opportunities for him to have one-on-one matchups and score out of that. He wasn't able to get the ball. Again, I told you, Brooklyn went to a zone in that fourth quarter. I think that kind of screwed them up a little bit. Saben Lee wasn't really working very well because I think he didn't feel super comfortable attacking, but he also isn't much of a shooter. So then it's like he missed a floater. What are you really going to do? And so there were multiple possessions in a row where Bridges and Johnson looked Ayton off. At one point, he kind of had something to say to Cam Johnson. Not crazy, not anger, not anything, but just sort of like, come on. Like, he just, I was sitting closer tonight than I usually am in the media section in the lower bowl, and I could see Ayton's face, and it was just like, you got to be kidding me. Like, it wasn't even mad. It was just like dumbfounded. Like, seriously, I can score here. They're guarding me with, even if it's Claxton. Claxton's like 6'10", 6'9". Ayton has a couple inches on him. So they finally get it to him. He made a shot, and it was a cap off of a pretty strong night. He did miss two free throws in the fourth quarter. Continues to be a weird problem for him, but I think you have to give credit where when he finally got the ball in that fourth quarter, he did make the shot to steady things, keep the offense moving, keep the Suns ahead with the lead. I think he felt more engaged to me. I don't know if it was an amazing defensive performance necessarily, but you noticed him. You noticed his activity. He scored the ball really well. He hit the glass. He dominated Nick Claxton. Claxton ended up with 20 and 11. I'd say for most of this game, really that was Kyrie getting the ball to him. Once the defense started to get more attention toward Kyrie, there were a few lob opportunities and things like that. Claxton got zero offensive rebounds. He was 9 of 12, but a lot of that came late, and Ayton really dominated that matchup. So tip of the hat to him. It is the byproduct of a guy like Cam Johnson returning to the lineup, the byproduct of even a player like Saben Lee stabilizing with the ball handling, and, you know, guys like Damian Lee and others in the role player department continuing to step up. I want to pivot to close the show. We got an update from Shams Charania about Matt Ishbia. Another highlight of this game was Matt Ishbia showed up. He was at this game and hilariously sitting in Robert Sarver's seats. So I'll give you my take on Shams's reports about the aggressiveness the Suns might have, and whether we're still getting the full story. We'll talk about that next. First, today's show, guys, brought to you as well by Built Bar. If you're looking for a delicious treat but don't want all of the fat and calories, you've got to try a Built Bar. It's just like a candy bar, but healthy is actually tasty with a Built Bar. Whether it's something you want to do in the new year or you're just trying to recover from the holidays a little bit, Built Bar is there for you. What makes Built Bar so good is that they're covered in 100% real chocolate to start. 100% real chocolate, each and every one. Plus, they come in unbelievable flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, coconut almond. If you like a candy bar, odds are Built Bar is going to have a comparable one. Coconut almond, of course. I think you know, if you've ever had a Almond Joy, this is Built Bar's version. Healthier, packed with protein, just as delicious. They keep the macros where they need to be while maintaining that deliciousness, so you're never really cracking 150 calories or 5 grams of sugar with a Built Bar, but you're always getting 15 to 20 grams of protein. It's pretty wild how they do it. You know you can go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON15, as always, to get 15% off, but if that weight doesn't sound good to you, if you go to Walmart or Sam's Club here in the Valley already for your shopping, great news. Built Bar is now available there. At Walmart, you can get a 4-bar box of cookies and cream, double chocolate, coconut puffs. At Sam's Club, you can stash up 13-bar boxes with brownie batter or churro. Check it out at the website, built.com. Head to your local Walmart or Sam's Club. Either way, try Built Bar, fall in love with Built Bar, and enjoy. Let's close out the show with an update from Shams Charania. He reported on Bally Sports' little NBA show that they do. I don't know when it's on. I don't know how to find it. I'm confused about it. But he had a hit. He posted it on Twitter, which is very helpful of him, so I don't have to find it, where he basically said, Matt Ishbia will attend the game, which you could see him. I'm sure they showed him on TNT or maybe not Bally if you watch the local broadcast. I don't know since it's not official yet, but the update from Shams gave a little more color. I also think there's an article going up on Sportico soon that will elaborate on the timeline. It doesn't look like he's going to be installed by the deadline, but what Shams said is that he has signaled, and so has James Jones, since the sale process started to accelerate, that they are open for business, they are willing to add salary to their sheet, and they're willing to part ways with first-round picks in trades. Now, I've already seen some chatter about this that is a little bit obnoxious, frankly, to me, where it's like, see, anyone who believed the BS about how the Suns were gonna not be able to make trades was just crazy, and how are you gonna believe that? And or almost like redirecting criticism at James Jones that somehow he was using that as an excuse. That's all silly. I hate more than anything when we talk about sports or really any news in the world, when people forget that, this sounds so basic, I don't even mean it in a condescending way. I think with social media and whatever, we have a very hard time remembering circumstances change. And so your opinion or your reaction to those things can change. Maybe I'm much more sensitive to that because I do a daily podcast talking about the same team over and over every day. And I have to be ready to adapt. If I just did this show once a week and it was an hour, I could come here and bark at you guys with the same obnoxious opinions every single time. And you might wonder if I'm even paying attention, but hey, it's just an hour every week. Different people listen every week. You get what you get, right? In this case, I think all of the things can be true when it comes to the Suns ownership situation, right? I think it can be true that at first, when the Suns didn't know who their owner would be, when Ishbia submitted a bid, but they were in the early stages of approval of that bid on the NBA side and the owner, other owners' side, that James Jones was probably restricted with what he could do. We know for sure that from Brian Windhorst that there is an agreement in place that Sarver would have had to approve any trade over $10 million, which Jay Crowder falls under, right? And so I think up to maybe the past week, 2 weeks, that really was the explanation. Whether that feels like giving James Jones too much slack or not, I don't really care what it has to do with James Jones because it's the truth. Now it seems to be fading. It seems like Sarver is giving up control a little bit. You heard Windhorst this week on ESPN, or I'm sorry, on 98.7 on the radio locally, telling the hosts over there, Bickley and Murata, that Crowder will for sure be traded, that Jones has been exploring the market for a while. Now you have this from Shams that there's been signals kind of sent out around the league that, hey, the Suns are open for business. They're ready to part ways with whatever it's going to take to improve this roster. And so now I think circumstances are different. I don't think Ishbia will be, you know, officially the governing, managing partner, team governor, whatever, of the Suns in time for the deadline, but it seems like his say is now the final say. I don't know if that's legally changed, but one part that I do think I will agree was always ridiculous is this idea of Sarver wanted this in place to sabotage the team one last time. That's very good for, an episode of The West Wing or whatever, but not real, okay? I think Sarver had that agreement in place because if you remember all the way back when the team first got put up for sale, the Suns internally were telling employees 6 to 9 months for the sale, if not maybe longer. And I think if it was 9 months, you're talking about after the season. You're talking about June of 2023. And so Sarver, as much as it's obnoxious that a suspended owner gets to have sway still, you're potentially looking at a situation where, you know, maybe he's even returning from his suspension and the team still hasn't been sold. I don't know how likely any of that was, but as a person who has an asset, even if you're suspended from like engaging with that asset, you got to be smart. You got to protect yourself a little bit. I think some of the stuff around not being able to have like the general counsel of the team fired, little sticky, little weird. But in terms of changing the payroll and trading players and all that, I think it's reasonable. I don't think it was a sabotage-y type of thing. And regardless, it's over now. So you can have opinions. You can judge James Jones as harshly as you want. But I guess I would just suggest that with how quickly and bizarre, how quickly the situation's changing, how bizarre it is overall, that you could at least have a little perspective and be willing to adjust how you feel based on the facts of the situation changing. You don't have to go back on what you felt before, but you can just say, hey, new guy's in charge now. Whatever was true then, not true now. And it seems like it's going to really help the Suns because aggressiveness, first round picks available, adding salary, those are all the things you've wanted to hear. I'm excited to hear for months now. Let the fireworks begin. That'll round us out for the week, guys. Probably much more to talk about by Monday on this front, but either way, two more games happening, a back-to-back Saturday and Sunday. Maybe you'll be there. I will be at the Grizzlies game for sure. We'll record post-game with Brandon. Don't forget, Apple Podcast 5-star review, fun comment, joke comment, analysis comment, whatever you want. I'm going to pick the best one and announce the winner on Monday. I only saw one or two in there so far, so if there's only a couple, then I might just have to pick the one that's in there. So get in on it. Win this shirt. It's legit. I'll mail it to you. It'll fit nicely. It's soft. All right. In the meantime, guys, thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen. Go make Locked On NBA your second listen here on this Friday to catch up on everything else going on around the league. That show's available on all podcast platforms as well, and I will talk to you all next week.